tomorrow night's the first night of Hanukkah. So actually, what we take as an obvious thing was not so obvious. It was a major debate in the Talmud in terms of, we know there's a mitzvah of lighting Hanukkah candles throughout Hanukkah. So the minimum obligation is, if you only have one candle, you can light one candle every night of Hanukkah. If that's what you have, then that's okay. If you want to do the best of the best, you want to do the ideal, so that we know we add a candle every night. So actually, this is a major debate between the school of Shammai and the school of Hillel, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. How do you begin and how do you end? So Beis Shammai says, not the way we do. You start 8 candles the first night, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and by the last night, you're ending up with 1. And Beis Hillel, the way we follow, we go from 1 to 8. So that's actually a major debate in the Talmud between the two schools when it first came out.
What were the reasons for doing one versus doing the other?
Very good. So the Talmud gives 2 reasons for each. So one reason they explain is, according to Beis Shammai, the question you ask is, how many days of Hanukkah are left? Okay, the first day, there are 8 days of Hanukkah, so I'm like, then 7 days, 6 days. And Beis Hillel says, no, you ask yourself what day of Hanukkah it is. And you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Or there's another reason given for each. We have a general principle. We go up in sanctity and we don't go down. So we always want to be heading in the right direction. So Beis Hillel says we always want to go up. So therefore, we want to go 1, 2, 3, not backwards. And Beis Shammai says, no, you know why? You know why we find precedent for going backwards, or not backwards, but going descending order? Where do we find a precedent? By the holiday of Sukkot, our last holiday we observed before Hanukkah. So, where do we find descending order? So, one of the things we do on the holiday of Sukkot is we bring 70 sacrifice, the 70 bulls, it actually is 70 cows, as in the temple. And it says, and because Sukkot is a universal holiday, it's the holiday where we bring for the whole world. And in fact, it says in the Talmud, if they realized how much blessing they get by letting us, by when we bring sacrifices on behalf of the whole world, they never would have destroyed the temple, the anti-Semites, if they realize how much blessing there is. But nevertheless, so what do? So on the first day of Sukkot, they do 13. Second day, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8. So they go the 8 days of Sukkot, they start at 13 and go down until they end up with 70 bulls. So we see, Beis Shammai says, this is like by the holiday of Sukkot, we go by descending order, not ascending order. So too by Hanukkah. Of course, the question is very nice, but what does Sukkot have to do with Hanukkah? I walk down the steps, therefore I should light 8, 7. It's a non-sequitur. There has to be more of a connection than that. So the commentators give a bunch of connections. Yeah.
I've got a third reason why they might use descending.
Okay, yeah.
And that is that the first night, they have lots of oil in the temple. The second night, they had less oil until they got down to a very little amount of oil. It was the last bit of oil that lasted.
Right, well.
I may have my facts wrong, but anyway.
Yeah, but either way, that might be true. That wasn't true the year when the Hanukkah miracle happened, but it might be, in other words, the reason why we celebrate Hanukkah 8 days is because when they went back into the temple after it was defiled, they only found there was 1 flask of oil that was supposed to last. But I hear what you're saying. That, you know, that could be other years, but I'm just going back to the original miracle wasn't that way. I'm not saying you're wrong. So therefore they point out as follows. So what's the connection? So first I'll give you a historical connection. Then I'll give you a more legal one. So historically speaking, even like on Purim, we read from Megillas Esther, the book of Esther. And that's one of the 24 books in the Bible, in Tanakh. So that's codified, canonized. But I mean, there's a book, it's called the Book of Maccabees, which is in which we believe historically might be accurate, but it's not a religious book, it's just a history book. It wasn't from the rabbis, and we don't read it on if you want to read it for history. But I mean, it's not part of the, like we like, on Purim, we read Megillas Esther, we do Shalach Mat, it's part of what the rabbis set up. Here, the history of the Maccabees is, the book of the Maccabees is a history book. So it's not necessarily, it wasn't with the consent of the rabbis or not, but it doesn't have to be. If you're telling me history, I'm willing to listen to what, if you give it, or as they say about history, his story. Everyone has their own take on history, but let's assume it's genuinely accurate. So what happened, they write, they wrote for many years, the Jews, the Syrian Greeks, who that's who the enemy was on Hanukkah, they went into the temple, they took it over and defiled it. They brought pigs, and they did all the terrible things, and they wouldn't. And the Jews, what do they usually do on the holidays? Pesach, Sukkot, and Shavuot. Before they used to have a pilgrimage, they used to travel up to Jerusalem and bring sacrifices. So during these years, they couldn't go. They weren't allowed to bring anything in the temple because it was defiled. They used to bring in the pigs and idol worship. So what happened? So Hanukkah, that year when the Hanukkah story happened, so what's the closest holiday to Hanukkah? It's Sukkot. Sukkot is the last holiday we had. So the people decided, they didn't ask anyone. I mean, they had good intentions. They said, you know what? Last holiday, Sukkot, we weren't able to observe because they didn't let us in our temple. We couldn't bring our sacrifices. We couldn't bring lul of an esro. We couldn't do our mitzvah. So the evidence is, you know what? Let's make it up. There is a concept when you miss, let's say you miss morning service, you could double up at afternoon service, say it twice. There is a concept of a makeup, but not over here per se. But they said they had a good intention. Let's make up. Now we have a temple back. Let's make up for what we missed during the holiday of Sukkot. So from a rabbinic point of view, it's not necessarily justified, but it did show the good intentions. Like, well, we really feel bad. We missed. Let's try to make it up. So the bottom line is, whether it was justified or not, that's what people did. So in the history of the Maccabees, this tells us that they did stuff on Hanukkah that they brought over from Sukkot. So that could be something. That's why Beis Shammai says we compare it to Sukkot, because on the first Hanukkah they took different customs from Sukkot to make up for what they missed. So that's why Beis Shammai goes back to the holiday of Sukkot and goes in descending order. That's one reason. Other reasons, a connection between Sukkot and Hanukkah. So one is how many days? We have 8 days of Sukkot and we have 8 days of Hanukkah. So we have a general rule. Hanukkah is a rabbinic holiday. It's post-biblical. That's why, in fact, the word Hanukkah, it really means dedication. They dedicated the temple. But also, if you spell out the words in Hebrew, Chanukah, it's Chanu Chafei, which means they rested on the 25th day of Kislev. That's tomorrow evening is the 25th day of Kislev. So it means is they finished with the war and now they finally began. But they have a play on words. We know there are 24 books in the Bible. So Chanukah would have been the next, but they didn't make the cut. The cutoff was the 24th. Hanukkah would have been the 25th, so they didn't get in. So either way, we have a principle that any called Tikkun D'Rabbanan, Ka'ein Doraisa Tikkun. Every rabbinic institution is patterned after a biblical law. So therefore, where do we find an eight-day holiday? Sukkot. Okay, so now for every biblical holiday, so the rabbi said, let's make an eight-day holiday of Hanukkah. Shavuos is only one day. We keep two, but in Israel it's one day. Purim, which is also a rabbinic holiday, so Purim is one day patterned after Shavuos. And so that's another connection. They both have 8 days. Another connection is, where do we sit in this? Where do we eat? Where is our sukkah located? Inside or outside? Outside. By definition, if we're sitting inside, we're not eating in a sukkah. Although, let me point out, there's some people build new homes where they have a roof that they can press a button and the roof comes off and they make it into a sukkah. So clearly, it's not a sukkah if you have the ceiling on. What they do is have, it's kind of like the sky dome, you know, like when it's raining, they put the roof on. So then it's okay, you know, but the bottom line is the sukkah is outside. Where did they light near Hanukkah? Not where we light today. The original institution was outside. They used to light opposite the mezuzah. When you walked into your home, you were surrounded by mitzvahs. One hand, you had the mezuzah. On the other side, you had the menorah. So what do they have? What's the connection? Both mitzvahs are done outside. During the time of the Talmud, that's when it was done outside. And even, in fact, many people in Israel continue to do it outside. And it's in warm weather places. Because that's a discussion. In other words, why do we switch from outside to inside? Why did we switch from outside to inside? Because we were originally lighting outside, and then they made a decree, religious persecution. If we catch you lighting Hanukkah candles, we're going to kill you or put you in jail, whatever. So obviously, the rabbi said, don't light outside anymore. What you do is light inside and put the light on your table. So if anyone comes in, they won't know it's Hanukkah. You need light to eat on. So that was originally it was outside, but because of religious persecution, we were forced to move it inside. So the question is today, we don't, depending where you live, but we're fortunate that we don't live under religious persecution. There are always anti-Semites around, but there's no government persecution, religious persecution. So the question is, do we keep it inside or do we move it back outside? So the practice in North America, I'd say the majority, a big majority, over 90%, I would say light inside.
If you have it outside, you've got the weather elements.
So very good. So therefore, yeah, so especially in Europe, so what do... Yeah, so practically, it's a good question. So I know in Brooklyn, my next door neighbor, because lit outside is because they put... They get lamps, they put oil in, and then they have covers. So yeah, so it takes a little more work, but they do it.
Linfield was a city hall. I lived in Hampstead. One time, it was these large
dogs
or Jews on
the bench. You said what?
One dogs or Jews.
At city.
They started accepting Jews. We all climbed in there. And the city hall outside has a big menorah.
Yeah, kind of like with Westdale.
Yes.
Originally, they were at one point they weren't letting Jews in. Yeah, so therefore they point out that so many people in Israel light outside because I'm wondering, you know, maybe California, Florida, depending on the weather. So today, either one is fine. Both are acceptable opinions. If you want to light inside today, which I'd say the majority do, but if you want to light outside. You could do, you know, again, but if you light outside, as Ron pointed out, you have to make sure you can't light outside knowing the candle is going to go out right away. Because the halacha is, when you light, in other words, we assume, generally speaking, the candle has to be lit for a minimum of a half an hour. You know, roughly around a half, you know, if we have electric lights, we don't have to worry. But if you do candles, they roughly run a half an hour. So let's say, let's say if I light candles and then And I know in the time I'm lighting the candle, I'm going to blow it out 30 seconds later. That's no good. So you don't get your mitzvah. And not only that, let's say I light by an open window. It's very windy outside, and I know in the next 2 minutes, the candles are going to get blown out. I can't light in a place where I know it's going to happen. By no, I mean it's likely, based on, of course, if you light in your own room, or here, and it happens to go out 5 minutes later, so then it's fine. You get your mitzvah. But you can't light in a situation where you know that it's not going to last. So you have to light because the halacha is that the mitzvah is lighting the menorah. So therefore, at the moment you light the candle or your oil, you have to have enough oil that it's going to last. Let's say I can't sit there with a cup of oil. Let's say I put in 5 minutes worth of oil, and then when it gets to 4.5, I pour in more, and that wouldn't be good, because at the moment I light the candles, I have to have enough oil that it's going to last for the half an hour for the requisite amount. So therefore, that's why back in the day, now it'd be crazy to think you could light a candle. It's crazy to think you're allowed to smoke on an airplane years ago. And some people used to light Hanukkah candles on an airplane. But even then, so let's say you know the stewardess is going to come out and blow it out. So that wouldn't be good either. That's like lighting in a place where you know it's not going to last. But if it happens by accident, it just happens to go out, the custom is to relight it. But even if you didn't relight it, you're okay. You don't have to relight it to fulfill the mitzvah, as long as you had all the things working at the time. So therefore, they point out that, so either way works. If you're going to light outside, you have to make sure, you can't just light it outside and it's going to be out in 30 seconds. If you light it outside, you have to put it in the proper precautions and put it in a box or however you're going to do it. So that's the issue there. So therefore we said, so number one, we have historical connection between Hanukkah and Sukkot. Back in the day that they, right after the holiday of Hanukkah happened, they did some things from Sukkot because they missed Sukkot, so therefore that's the connection. Others say 8 days of Hanukkah, 8 days of Sukkot. And then I think doesn't Adam Sandler have a song about 8 days of Hanukkah? We get gifts 8 days, and then exactly. And then there is the connection to both outside. I mean, or historically speaking, and number three, a fourth connection is that there's a limit how high a sukkah could be. I don't mean from ground floor. I mean if you put the sukkah on top of the roof, that's okay. I don't care how high. I mean from the floor where the sukkah is, like, because some apartment buildings that's fine. But let's say we built the sukkah here, which was 100 feet high, and we built it properly. It wouldn't be good because it's too high. Why are we worried about being what is
three stories?
Why is the sukkah? Because one of the purposes when you eat in the sukkah or people walking by, we're supposed to remember the miracle that the Jews, when they traveled in the desert, that God took care of us for 40 years. And either like he saved us from the wild animals, the people, whether it means they actually built huts or it was the cloud of glory, that we're supposed to look at the schach, the top part of the sukkah, and remember the miracle. But the principle is, a person doesn't look that high. I mean, the casual observer, not someone who's looking for it. If someone's walking by and something, they're not going to notice it. So therefore, we have a rule. It can't be, over a certain height. So the same rule that applies to sukkah applies to Hanukkah. Hanukkah can't be too low to the ground, and it can't be too high. Why? Because, again, the whole purpose, because if you see, Let's say I don't know anything, I don't know Hanukkah. Let's say you see lights, okay. The person wants to eat, the person wants to read. People have lights in their house. Again, this is before electricity, when people had candles in their homes. So how would I know I'm lighting Hanukkah candles? Maybe I just lit up, I want, Hanukkah's at night, I wanted to be able to read, I want to be able to eat. So therefore, we put it, so therefore, if you put it at a certain level, where you want it to be noticeable, that the purpose is for Hanukkah lights. So therefore, so another connection between Sukkot and Hanukkah is it can't be too high, because when we look at the, we want the average person when they walk in here to see the candles, assuming we had like 80-foot ceilings, which we don't, the person's not going to, the casual observer is not going to look all the way up and see. So therefore, part of publicizing the miracle, we want people to see the candle. In fact, that's why, in general, if I do a commandment, we usually have a blessing attached to it. So it's generally speaking, it's nice to do it, the blessing, but if you don't, you still get the commandment, even if you didn't make the blessing. We try to make the blessing, but for whatever reason, let's say Shabbos candles, I forgot to make the blessing, but I lit the... So as long as you have light in the house, you get the mitzvah. And but or, you know, or other mitzvah, so what about Hanukkah candles? So we assume also by near Hanukkah, but there's one opinion, Rav Yaakov Emden, who said, if you don't make a blessing by Hanukkah, you don't get the mitzvah. Why? Same idea, because the whole purpose of Hanukkah candles is to make it that we know it's for Hanukkah. You're not putting, it's not just to put lights in your house, it's to remember the miracle that happened, the oil, God saved us, the miracle with the Maccabees over the Syrian Greeks, that God saved us, and the miracle of the oil. So by making a blessing, we are showing, look, I'm lighting this candle for the purposes of Hanukkah, not for other reasons. So that's why, that's the connection between Hanukkah and Sukkot. Like, so we have four connections. We have the historical connection from the book of the Maccabees that they try to make up in the Mishtaladei. We have 8 days of Hanukkah, 8 days of Sukkot. So we pattern the rabbinical mitzvah of Hanukkah after the biblical mitzvah of Sukkot. Or just like Sukkot is outside, Hanukkah is outside. Just like Sukkot can't be too high, so too Hanukkah, the candles can't be too high. And that's why Beis Shammai compares the lighting of the candles to the holiday of Sukkot. And that's why he says we go from 8 to 1, not 1 to 8. So that's a major debate between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. We obviously follow Beis Hillel. But what's the issue in this debate? Like, so in general, Beis Shammai was someone who always looked past the headlines. He looked at the potential. He went deep down into the event. So basically, what did Beis Shammai see? In this, on the first night of Hanukkah, we had the ability to light 8 days. So he looks at the potential. So when's the potential greatest? The first day of Hanukkah, because it had the potential to last for 8 days. The second day, it's only 7 days of potential, 3 days. So therefore, you're going down in potential. Like I always say, what is the, when someone's going on a vacation, well, we don't know what those are anymore until COVID leaves, who goes away anymore. But back in the day when we had people used to go on trips, so what's the best day of your vacation? So I like to say, it's the day before. Why? Because everyone has all the best dreams, itinerary, you write down, you think, well, I'm going to do X. You have a whole list of 25 things I'm going to do. You know, most people don't get close to, usually the plan is usually greater than what we do. So it's the potential. We're the happiest now. Well, we're thinking about all the 25 things, even though we'll probably only do a lucky 10 of them, but the potential is greatest before. As I like giving the jelly bean example, everyone likes jelly beans, or most people do, and people have their favorite flavors. What's your favorite flavor?
I don't like them.
Okay. It doesn't have to be jelly beans. We could switch to a candy you like, but...
Chocolate.
What's your favorite flavor? Pick a candy you like. It doesn't have. I'm just using. Right. Okay. So let's say you have your favorite flavor. Let's say it's licorice, and let's say you like them both, but green's your least favorite, and black's your most favorite. So, which one would you eat first? I'm asking. It's no right or wrong. I'm asking you what you would do, and you might not know. What? You'd eat the black one first. Right. So therefore. So that makes, at first glance, that makes sense. And then what do I mean is, because you're eating, so therefore you're oat.
I don't think so.
No.
Okay. I eat the one I like best last because that means the taste in my mouth.
I do also. I'm saying I'm starting, well, I'm explaining why this way, but I'm with you. I didn't get to there yet. So, at first glance, it's better because why? You're eating the best one all the time. Right now is my favorite. So you're always eating the best one. That's the argument why you would eat. And others say, no. It doesn't work that way because there's a... I'm sure you're familiar with Heinz ketchup. And there was a commercial, I don't know if they still have it, and they showed you with the Heinz ketchup, anticipation. And it was just showing how you're waiting for the ketchup to come. They spent billions of dollars. They know what to do. So the point is the anticipation of the ketchup is better than the ketchup itself. In other words, when you look forward to something, it's even better than the actual taste. And that's why, therefore, even though, let's say I'll eat my green one face, but the anticipation, Ron's adding another thing, practically it might be the taste in my mouth also. But the anticipation of saving the best for last, that tastes more, that's better than the whole jelly bean's gonna taste. This makes me happy looking forward. So and what do you think? There's a big difference if you go to a burger, you know, fast food joint, you know, whatever it might be. So it would be a $10, you know, let's call it a $10 dinner. If you go to a fancy restaurant, they charge you a couple of $100s, but making up prices. So what's the difference? I mean, there's a lot of differences, but one big difference is, see, a fast food, you're in and out like in 10, you're in and out in, going like to Tim Hortons, you're in and out in 15 minutes. If you ever go to a fancy restaurant, you notice how long they take in between servings. Someone, they come out, the bread and that, because the whole ambiance is the anticipation of the food you're going to get. That sometimes it's even greater than the, a lot of times it's better than the food you actually get. But that's the point is, so the anticipation of the event is greater than the event itself. So Beis Shammai goes with potential. Right now, it's the greatest potential. 8 days of potential. Okay, now, only 7 days left of potential. 6, 5. So therefore, they're going down. And Beis Hillel goes with reality in life. It's true that in a certain sense, you know, that anticipation is great, but the bottom line is we don't really usually live up to our potential. In other words, we don't usually live up to, you know, even maybe an ideal world. So Beis Hillel is more like Midas HaRachamim, that we try our best, and maybe it's true, we should feel it, but we don't. So maybe what's our best chance of feeling it? If I lie 1, now 2, and I build myself up, because we're human beings, we're affected by our environments and everything. Like, we have a similar dispute on Kiddush Friday night. So we follow Beis Hillel again. We make the Borei, we make the blessing on the wine, and then we make the Kiddush. Beis Shammai said you make the Kiddush first, and then the blessing on the wine. Why? Because Beis Shammai is the higher level. You feel Shabbos, you know. What's the main part? You feel the Shabbos right away. I want to start off with the set, and then I'll have the wine later. That's, in theory, that's true, but we live in reality. We just spent 6 days. We weren't experienced. It's going to take, we can't just jump into Shabbos overnight. We got to work. So therefore, we need a little drink of wine to get us in the mood. You know, we have to do things. We all know we're human beings, as they say, even the great rabbis. We know when it came to Isaac, our father, it said when he told Esau, before I give you a blessing, you know, I got to be in a good mood. Go go get me some good meat, get me some good ribs, get me a good meal, and then after a good meal, I'll be feeling good. I'll give you a nice bracha. Or we find in the prophet, when they asked someone to get ready for prophecy, he said, okay, yeah, kechuli minagain, find me someone to play me some music. Because we know music's uplifting. Music gets you into a mood of doing things, so let me hear music. And we all know that as we moved into the sad time, season adjustable disorder, the time when we change the clocks, it's a whole long and cold, dark winter. Different people, everyone likes more light, but some people have a condition where you're more likely to get depressed over the winter months because you wake up, it's dark, it gets dark at 5 o'clock. So this is a season. So we know in Judaism we believe in artificial means to make you feel good. So there's nothing wrong to having a good meal. That's why every Shabbos in Yontif, we want to feel the Yontif. We know we're not on the level. Yeah, okay, Chanukah is here. We like a nice latke, a nice jelly donut. We want things to get us into the mood. Beis Shammai is right. Really, on our own, we should be excited. Not that we're not, but we should feel Chanukah right away. We live in Beis Hillel's world, in reality, that we're not that, you know, we're not on that level. We need some good food once in a while. We need some nice music to get us into the mood, and we need some lights. In fact, it's not coincidental that the rabbis gave us, see, really on a biblical level, we go from Sukkot, which is like in the fall, and then Passover is the next holiday. But the rabbis realized it's a long time to go without any Jewish holidays to get you happy. So they introduced two rabbinic holidays, you know, two of our favorites. No restrictions. Hanukkah and Purim. One of the, you know, two holidays that everyone liked. Because why? Because during this hard winter, they want us to come. We need to have some joy. We need hamantashen. We need jelly donuts. We need the works. And that's why, and it's not coincidental, it's the holiday of lights. Because now we're beginning the dark winter, and we need Hanukkah to keep us going until for the next couple of months, until spring comes and it starts getting, and we move, it's sunset, we move to 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. So that's what Hanukkah is all about. It's the time of rebirth, that we have to go ahead and we light the candles because it's a dark winter, cold winter, and even though there's a bait between the school of Shammai and Hillel, and Shammai might be right on a theoretical plane if you're on his level, but Beis Hillel is talking reality. We're not usually on Beis Shammai's level. You know, what should be, we want to know what helps. And therefore, we live in the world of, we are having a good meal, hearing some nice music, and in fact, and turning lights, you know, there's nothing worse than, you know, being in the dark, stubbing your toe and taking it on everyone else. And that's what Judaism is all about. We take the mundane, we take the everyday things of food, music, lights, and we use it in the service of our God. That's what we believe. God gave us all these pleasures, so God gave us, there's nothing wrong with having good food, and especially on the holiday. You can have it all year round, but on Chanukah, on Shabbos, Yontif, you know, we try to have special meals that we've had at home, but you know, now we have here. So that's the concept of Chanukah. So even though Beis Shammai compares it to Sukkot, but we go with Beis Hillel, Malin Bakodesh Vemorid, and we have to work on ourselves. In fact, a fire could be understood in two ways. There's two elements to fire. What does fire have the capability to burn and destroy? You burn down home, you know, fire can do terrible destruction. On the other hand, back in the day, before they had Canada Goose and North Face and warm coats, yet a fire kept you warm. Fire gave us light. We couldn't, before electricity, you couldn't see. So fire was amazing. It was a tremendous warmth. It warmed up your home and it gave you light. So that seems to be the debate here between Shammai and Hillel. But Shammai, they say the purpose is we got to burn out all the evil in us. So therefore, they look at the fire of burning out, and therefore, each day we burn out the evil influence, we get closer to the redemption. We go 8, 7, 6, 5. And Beis Hillel says that might be true in theory, but in practically, we have to take it day by day. We have, in other words, there's two ways of getting rid of darkness, getting rid of evil. So Beis Hillel says we have to spread the light. In other words, Ma'at min ha'or docha harbe min ha'chosh, a little bit of light pushes off a lot of darkness. That we want to take not the fire of destruction, but the fire of warmth and light, and we want to bring people closer to Judaism that way. In fact, there's a debate in the Talmud when I'm lighting Hanukkah candles. Let's say it's the third night. Could I take the second candle and light the third candle? We have a shamish. We have another one, and we do it. But am I allowed to take from one candle and light to another? So it's a debate in the Talmud. So the person who says no says, why no? Because you're diminishing the second night. If you take some fire from there, or from oil, you're diminishing the fire. And the other rabbi said, it's true, you might be diminishing, but you're doing much more. You're giving light to someone else. And that's, you know, speaking of Rev. Jonathan Sacks, who is the chief rabbi in one of his... I know, passed away. We're 30 days ago. Shoshim. So therefore, that's one of the things he writes about all the time is that, but we believe, you know, that by going ahead and giving light to others, we're actually bringing more light. So even though you might be taking away a little from the light, but objectively, you're bringing someone else closer, and that's Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai is the more stern approach. Fire, let's get rid of all evil, burn it out, and that might be true, but we're not on that level. We got to take the warmth of the light of Hanukkah and try to get more people involved the people who aren't observant, haven't been educated. It's our job to teach them about Judaism and try to bring them closer. And that's the message of Hanukkah and the message of Beis Hillel.
Rabbi, you
light up
the Shabbat candles before, right?
Correct.
And